Mr. Rogers has been feeding bears since 1967 in order to better study their behavior. Government says feeding bears changes their behavior, and so Mr. Rogers must stop feeding them. This conflict of interest and conflict of law leads us to ask, should Mr. Rogers stop feeding the bears?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 930th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Aaron Shore at the controls. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
And thanks also to producer Kelly Bayer for helping build our shows. Folks, Aaron, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Should Mr. Rogers stop feeding the bears?
I don't see any reason as to why he shouldn't.
Well, there you go. Maybe we'll come up with a reason as we go through this program. Folks, Lynn Rogers is making Ely, Minnesota famous by feeding its bears. People travel from far and wide and pay good money to watch. Mr. Rogers and his Wildlife Research Institute feed bears in order to better understand their behavior. As people move farther out into the country, as we all are doing, there is more interaction between civilized people and wild animals, and bears especially. Mr. Rogers believes that by studying the behavior of wild bears, civilized people can learn better how to get along with them. To promote his studies, the Wildlife Research Institute features live den cams so people can everywhere can watch bears in their dens, having their babies, sleeping, and whatnot. And lots of people do watch. The Institute also sells bear research tours so visitors can watch bears being fed in the wild, and they come and watch. This feeding of the bears has focused a lot of attention on the tiny town of Ely, Minnesota, prompting the town mayor to tell a Wall Street Journal reporter, Ely was already on the map, but this was really big for us. However, not everyone is supportive. In fact, Minnesota's Department of Natural Resources is telling Mr. Rogers to stop feeding the bears because it has received at least 50 complaints of bad bear behavior in the neighborhood. To back up its demands, the government is trying its best not to renew Mr. Rogers' feeding permit, thus precipitating a legal wrangle that has been won, temporarily at least, by Mr. Rogers and his fellow bear enthusiasts. This legal tug-of-war between Mr. Rogers and the government leads us to ask, should Mr. Rogers stop feeding the bears? And here to help us hunt down an answer, we have Mr. Rogers himself, who is actually Dr. Lee Rogers, who is the lead biologist and proprietor, I think, of the Wildlife Research Institute in Ely, Minnesota. Dr. Rogers, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you aboard. So you are Mr. Bear, as far as I can see. You've been researching bears for a long, long time. You have a PhD in bear behavior. Is that true?
True, yeah.
And so you've been working from Michigan to Minnesota, researching bear and bear behavior. And you got your start, I guess, working with the local government and moving bears away from campgrounds, right?
Stuff like that, yes, homes and wherever where they were trouble. And it is true that food can lead bears into trouble, and most people focus on that. There's a saying, a fed bear is a dead bear, but there is actually no science behind that saying. And if I was listening to your introduction, I would have said certainly I should stop immediately feeding bears. But there's way more to it than that.
And that's what we're here to discover today, is what more there is to it. And given your history, I think there's a lot to it. People have said you're like the Jane Goodall of bears, in that your bear studies have really led to increasing the understanding of civilized people about wild bears. And they say that because your research has been incredibly more in-depth than probably classical science research, in that you actually walk with bears in the woods, correct?
Yes, because you more or less have to be able to see them to know them.
Mm-hmm. And to see them, how do you get that close?
Well, it started way back. I had always believed that if you feed a bear, it's going to become dependent, lazy, forget how to forage naturally. It's going to become more aggressive toward people. It's going to lose its fear of people, and that would lead to attacks. And so I was hesitant after initiating a different kind of study where you capture a bear, it's scared in the trap, it looks ferocious. Then you tranquilize the bear, you think you have a dangerous animal there. You put a radio collar on it, you track it from an airplane. And while it's tranquilized, you take some measurements. And I did that for, a couple decades.
And that's really the classic way of wildlife research, right? You capture an animal, you tranquilize it, you study it, you know, measure it, check it out, see how long it is and how much it weighs and those kinds of things. And then you put a radio collar on it and you turn it loose.
Yes, you publish the measurements and you have peer-reviewed papers coming out of your ears and you think you really know a lot about the animals.
And then what you do is you follow it with an airplane and then you plot dots on a map, right?
Yes. And then, and we learned a lot doing that, but when it gets down to what kind of habitat is important to it, what do they really eat? What is their social organization? What are their vocalizations and body language? How do they live? What do they, you know, what do they, all the, you know, what problems do they face in the woods? I couldn't learn any of that with the old methods. Because I found that you can only learn so much about a bear by tranquilizing it, measuring it, and putting some dots on a map when you can't even see the bear.
What made you take the leap to going into the woods with the bears and actually kind of living with them, I guess?
I did a very, very thorough literature search of where do these ideas come from, all the old ideas that filled my mind and most people's minds today. There was just nothing in the literature. It was people surmising what might happen, and it was driven by an intense fear of bears. Mm-hmm. And there was a problem going on near my research station that the U.S. Forest Service campground was removing bear after bear. Bears had come there, they'd get in trouble, and you take them away, maybe they're killed, whatever. And then the usual line of thought was using all the jargon words, that the bear comes there, they get habituated to people, which just really means they get used to people. And they become food conditioned. They get to like the food that is in the campground. And then they look for more of it in the residential area around it. People get tired of them going to their bird feeders or whatever, demand that they're removed. I thought there might be a different explanation.
And before you take us there, I'd like to take a step back here and say that this is the what we're going to be exploring today, but we're not going to be exploring it with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, which, in spite of many requests over the past week, have declined to participate in this conversation. You know, I'm finding after 930 editions of the Food Chain radio program that government does not like to talk things over. I think what government likes to do is peek out from one of their cubicles in a mass bureaucracy and say, stop beating the bears. and then they disappear back into their bureaucracy. And people like Mr. Rogers go, well, what did he tell me? Quit feeding the bears? Who said that? Why did they say that? And then there's nobody to talk to, because the government people, I think, would rather dictate than converse. And so we must proceed today without them, which is just fine, because we can certainly proceed without them, and that we shall. The questions we're working with today on the food chain: why feed bears in the wild? What happens to wild bears when they are fed? And should we feed wild bears in the woods? This with Dr. Lynn Rogers, he of the Wildlife Institute, Research Institute in Ely, Minnesota. And you are invited to participate. Pick up your phones, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, there are bears in the woods, and we are moving into the woods. So the question is, how do we get along with those wild animals that live in the woods, we being civilized and they not? Well, one way we might feed them and get a little bit closer to them. Rogers, Lynn Rogers, has started out with a classical approach where you sedate the bears with a shot of something or other, and then you measure the bear and you put a radio collar on him, and then you follow him around with an airplane and put dots on the map, and you kind of follow him around that way and interpolate or extrapolate what the bear is doing. But one time, I guess, Dr. Rogers figured, well, what I'm going to do is get close and follow the bears into the woods and really get to know them. And you looked at the literature. There was nothing really in the literature about how bears really live. So what was your first bear relationship, Dr. Rogers?
Well, it didn't jump right into that. It was that there was a campground that had so many problems, and they were killing so many bears, that I wondered if there was a better way. And I was working at the time as a research scientist for the U.S. Forest Service, and it was a U.S. Forest Service campground. So I proposed that we try diversionary feeding as an experiment a quarter mile away. And, I'll kill that.
The idea being that instead of having the animals go to the campgrounds to be fed, you'd set up a feeding station someplace else.
Yes. And what we didn't know is if it would concentrate bears just a quarter mile from the campground and make problems worse, or if it would draw them away from the campground. And the first year we did it, I didn't tell the campground managers that we were doing this, and I just kept asking them, how are the bear problems this year? And they were telling me, you know, we can't understand it, but for the first time, we're not having bears go up to people and try to get food. We're not having bears breaking into tents. We just don't have any problems. So it looked like it was working. And then the next year, there was a real test. It was the worst natural food year on record, according to Department of Natural Resources records, and the most bear complaints ever. And there were a couple areas where there just weren't problems. One was my study area. And, well, to make a long story short, during the 8 years of that study, we reduced problems 88% in the campground and the surrounding residential area.
Hmm. And so, contrary to popular belief, feeding the bears worked.
Yes. Instead of a fed bear being a dead bear, a fed bear was a healthy bear. And instead of leading bears into trouble with food, we found a way to lead them out of trouble.
Hmm. So you thought, maybe this direction has merit, and so let's pursue it.
Worth further study, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So then there was one other area, well, two other areas. One was a 10-mile radius around a big garbage dump that didn't have problems that year. Another place there I didn't know about before that, but an area where they had been feeding bears for many years, like 25 years.
Who was feeding the bears?
That was Eagle's Nest Community, where I'm studying bears now.
Mm-hmm. So it was like feeding them in the town dump or something? Or just...
A dozen households hand-feeding the bears.
Ah.
Everything that a person would say is terrible.
Uh-huh.
There was a big newspaper article about that being one of the areas that just was not having bear problems that year. Instead of house break-ins like were everywhere, the article was about the lack of problems in that area. And it showed a bear just resting at the feet of a man sitting on a lawn chair, and he'd give the bear food, and it was amazing. So when I retired from the Forest Service, I loved my job, so I started a new study in that community and became one of the then 13 feeders,
uh-huh.
a household that the bears could come to, be welcome. And that meant they were not at households where they were not welcome. And they didn't, and instead of them learning that there's food at houses and going house to house, they went to the houses where they could get fed. And anybody who didn't want to see a bear could reduce his attractants and have the bears easily move on because it was a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is usually missing in the story of what bears do if they get fed is what their alternatives are.
So if there are no alternatives, then things are going to get dicey then.
That's right.
So as long as you've got 13 neighbors feeding the bears, you're okay.
Yes. And if the people would not feed the bears and there was good food in the woods, that's where the bears would go. But when things get bad with bears and humans is when there's just nothing in the woods.
Late
frost, a drought, whatever.
Yeah. So I'd like to ask you, you obviously know a lot about bears. I just read this interesting example today in the paper. The story was about animals and the difference between dogs and cats. When you feed a dog, a dog looks up at you and sees a human being pouring its food out and thinks, wow, that human being must be a god. But if you're a cat, you see a human being pouring food for you, the cat thinks, I must be a god. So are bears dogs or cats?
Well, I'm not sure, but I know this, that these bears that are fed by people, they have no feelings for the people. They trust the people.
Ah.
But they're not drawn to them. They don't want to engage them in play. They don't want to hang out with them just for hanging out. When the bears are eating, they're working. They're making a living.
Mm-hmm.
They're making milk, and they're growing. And so it's a business for them. And so, as well, to shorten up another story, as we got into that study, that eight-year study, the big problem that people saw with it is, what if these bears would get, quote, habituated and food conditioned? Wouldn't that be a problem? I thought, okay, we'll make darn sure that they are thoroughly habituated and food conditioned, And we'll see in a worst-case scenario then whether diversionary feeding is effective, even if they're habituated and food-conditioned. And that led to us actually walking with bears. They got to trust us enough that eventually we could transfer this trust to a new location. And not every bear would accept that because they all have different personalities. But a few of the bears were accepted us enough that we could walk with them and be ignored as they went about their lives. And that opened the door to learning all about bears.
And when you say all about bears, you mean how they live their day-to-day lives and how they walk in the woods and how they fend for themselves in the woods and how they socialize with other bears and all of those things that really you can't learn from flying around in an airplane plotting dots on a map, right?
Yes, you have to see them to really know. And this was the first study like that. And it just opened the door to so much. I mean, the first year that I did that, I learned more than I had in the decades before that.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking with Dr. Lynn Rogers. He, the Mr. Rogers of Beardom in Ely, Minnesota, who walks with the bears in the woods. Government says stop feeding the bears, Dr. Rogers. And Dr. Rogers, and of course, is fighting that and is winning to date, at least. He can still feed the bears. He can still have his bear tours. But the government is fighting mightily to stop him. So the question on the table today, should Mr. Rogers stop feeding the bears? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, there's two ways of studying bears in the woods, I guess other wild animals as well. One way, you can capture them and with tranquilizers put a radio collar on and then follow them around and plot their points and try to extrapolate what they were doing in between those points. The other way is that you can feed them and thus gain their trust. And through that trust, follow them into the woods and watch and see what they actually do, what they eat, how they socialize, how they get along. Dr. Lynn Rogers of the Wildlife Research Institute up in Ely, Minnesota, pursued the latter course and learned a lot about his bears, and through that understanding really brought a whole world of bear knowledge to a very broad spectrum of people who live all over the world through bear cams inside the den, through tours and whatnot, through his bear center there in Ely. A lot of people are learning a whole bunch about bears, but the government says in feeding those bears, you are changing their behavior. So let's pick that notion up and talk about how feeding does or is alleged to have changed the behavior of animals. I'll just kind of throw these objections out, Doctor, and you hit them down if you want. First of all, if we feed bears, they become reliant on people and no longer develop the essential skills they need to forage for themselves out in the woods.
Totally wrong. yes, that's one of the assumptions that people always believed, that if you feed bears, they become lazy, dependent, forget how to forage naturally, and become ever more aggressive in trying to get that food, and maybe even attack people. So my next step, after we saw that feeding bears a quarter mile away from this campground and residential area reduced bear problems 88%, I wanted to next study an area where they had fed bears ever since 1961. And so in 1996, I started a study there, and I began checking Department of Natural Resources records about complaints from that area. And 10 years into the study, I found that it was an 80% reduction from the state average.
And that's the little town wherein all the neighbors are feeding the bears, right?
Yes. Yep, a dozen people, and then I joined them as another feeder so I could better study it. So I was seeing that it was really effective. And if it hadn't been that effective, they wouldn't have continued it that long. If it led to attacks and more problems rather than fewer problems, they would have long banned feeding in the community. But instead, they embraced it. They'd see bears, thought nothing of it. They were used to seeing bears. Bears were used to seeing people. And that neither one was a problem to the other.
Okay, then the bears can still feed themselves even though they're being fed by the people of this small town.
That became my study, is to find out, okay, people say that it changes the bears. Let me study these bears to see what they actually do. Because I had the previous long-term study of an area where bears were not fed. That was even before the campground experiment. And that was an award-winning study, won the U.S. Forest Service Quality Research Award. And I wanted to compare the bears in this around this community with the bears in that study. And what I found was they had a strong preference for the wild foods.
Oh.
And when wild foods were scarce, yes, they would go a little farther down their list of preferred foods and come to the dozen feeding stations in the community. But when natural food was abundant, like this year, extremely abundant, those feeding stations are hardly getting a visit. The bears prefer the wild food.
Interesting. Let's go to the phones. We have a couple callers. The phone numbers today, folks, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Nick, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What I wanted to get to is, what are you feeding them? Because decades and decades I've driven past roadkill, and I've always looked at it as I'm less safe in a bear country with that deer rotting on the side of the road. And without a network, it's not so easy to bring a bear into bear country, but it would be very much appreciated. And alternating sites, like closer to the wild. So how is it getting for you? What are you feeding? You said something like we would not like what we're feeding them.
Thank you for the call, Nick. What do we feed wild bears?
Oh, the main foods that people are feeding here are nuts, which is a natural wild food. But not necessarily the same kind of nuts. Yes, hazelnuts, common here, a favorite food. Pecans, almonds, peanuts, and dried fruit.
Mm-hmm. No Hostess Twinkies?
No. Actually, I think they would eat a Twinkie, yes, and marshmallows and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but... the people here want to take good care of the bears, and you don't see much of that.
Okay, good. Let's go to Mary on the phone. Mary, welcome to the food chain.
Hi there. I have a question. Having been to a town up in Montana called Cook City, they have grizzly bears there, and I'm sure other bears as well. They drift around from the park, the Yellowstone Park. But those grizzly bears will hang out at the city dump. And once in a while, you'll hear problems about folks in town having them try to break down doors and get into cabins. But I wonder, do dumps and their proximity to towns perhaps offer bears a place to be rather than to be in town, similarly to your feeding stations?
Good question.
Exactly. There you go. And what always had been, because I started out with the idea, actually working for people that believed this, that garbage dumps were the introduction to bears going to people's houses. But what nobody tested was, without the dumps, would there be more or less problems in town? And as my studies progressed, I saw that, yes, the dumps were a form of diversionary feeding. And when the dumps were gone, decades later, there were more problems than when there were the dumps.
Wow. There you go. So you maintain, and through your award-winning study, you see that bears do not become reliant on people, that they do not lose their essential foraging skills, that when fed, that the food that people feed them It becomes one of the foods that the bears eat, but not necessarily the preferred food. They prefer the wild food, which probably has a more broad spectrum of nutrients in it than just people food would. Would that be true?
Exactly, because out in the wild they eat a great variety of foods, and I think that's part of the attraction of the wild versus a feeder.
Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, we're going through the list of objections here with Professor Dr. Lynn Rogers, who is the proprietor of the Wildlife Research Institute in Ely, Minnesota. He also the chief biologist and a biologist of significant note in the world of beardom. And the question of today is the federal government, the state government, wants Mr. Rogers to stop beating the bears. And so we're asking, should he? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Back into the woods. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We're talking about feeding the bears and, through feeding the bears, getting access to them, the kind of access we would not get otherwise, with Dr. Lynn Rogers, who is the proprietor of the Wildlife Research Institute, Ely, Minnesota. You've got quite an operation going up there, Doctor. You've got an institute, you have a center, and you have all kinds of people from all over the world focusing their attention on you via the internet. Quite an interest built up that you should did some pretty good marketing there.
Actually, it was nothing we did to market, but it is what caused major problems with the Department of Natural Resources.
And what was the cause of that problem? Why did the Department of Natural Resources start focusing attention on you and saying you have to stop feeding the bears?
Well, there was two stages of that. One was 5 years before the big worldwide attention. A new wildlife manager came in, and he believed all the old misconceptions. He thought he knew. And he just came in here one day and said, when are you going to end this project? I don't like feeding in my area. And I said, well, actually, we're here to study the effects on the bears of it. It's been going on here since 1961, and this was in 2005 when he was saying this. And if you check your records, you'll see that there's not been a complaint from this community for 8 years. And the two complaints in the 2 years before that were just benign things, a bear at a bird feeder and a young bear looking in somebody's window. A peeping bear.
Well,
no big problems. And so I said, I could stop feeding, yes, but there's a dozen other households that have been feeding all this time. I'm here to study what are the long-term effects of long-term feeding on the bears, and we're learning that everything that we're finding out is different than most officials would think.
Well, you know, when I was a young person, my parents took me on vacation. Being raised in Montana, my folks often took us on vacation to Yellowstone Park. And for young boys, my brother and myself took great pleasure in playing hide-and-go-seek with the bears in the campground, because there were always lots of bears in the campground at that time. And I think we teased them unmercifully, as young boys will, and perhaps we were the reason that Yellowstone Park eventually hung out their "Don't Feed the Bears" signs. And I just wonder about the behavior of bears when they lose their instinctive fear of people. You know, when you feed them and gain their trust, they also lose their fear of people. And I just wonder, you know, what impact that has for you, like in hunting season, for example.
Good questions. Super. Thank you. Yes. Good entry into several topics. One is that there is a state park campground within the study area. And what I cannot explain is why none of these bears have ever gone into that campground. I mean, these are bears that we walk with. These are bears that people hand feed. But when it comes to that campground, there's not been one in it. So sometimes what makes human sense doesn't make bear sense. And then you mentioned what happens in hunting season. For another thing that I cannot explain, the longevity of these bears that have lost their fear of people is higher than the bears that just in the overall population. The average age of males in the kill is 2. For females, it's 3. One of the bears we're studying is now 26 years old. Others are in their teens. And I cannot explain this longevity.
Wow. Let's go to Annalise. Annalise, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, and thank you for a really interesting program, a very different look at bears than how we're normally to see them. I've read about your study and your work with the bears before. This is wonderful to have you be able to speak to so many people about it. I wondered what happens, however, in times, or what do you think would happen in times when people could no longer feed the bears things like the nuts and the things that are good for them, or if there's a general dearth of food or of less money for people to be able to feed these bears.
And they
go back to taking apart their cars and trying to get their food because they're tourists and they have some food and the bears are hungry.
Which is what happens like in Yosemite and Yellowstone and whatnot.
Yes.
And by extension, what would happen, Professor Rogers, should those 13 people who are feeding the bears move out of town?
Okay.
Thank you for answering.
I don't fully know the answer, but I just know that the data show that in this community, the problems, bear complaints, are 80% lower than the statewide average. So I would think that complaints would then just go up to the statewide average, which would mean that they would be 5 times higher.
Okay. So this all sounds very reasonable, of course, but the government refuses to join us and to put their side of the argument on the table. So we're really not certain what the heck they're talking about. But we're going to ask Mr. Rogers, Professor or Dr. Rogers, what the heck the government's complaint is and why they're so persistent in going after him and forcing him to stop feeding the bears. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Feeding the Bears is the subject with Lynn Rogers, PhD, biologist, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. It's pretty much a fact that we are moving out of the city into the country, and as we do, we're meeting more and more wildlife out there. And my goodness, how do we get along with them? Well, Dr. Lynn Rogers says we can get along with them by getting to know them better. And a good way of getting to know them is to gain their trust. And the way to gain their trust is to feed them a little bit of food. And in doing so, the animals will come to trust you and you can get close to them and learn things about them that you simply can't in classical research. The government, on the other hand, says when you feed a bear, you change its behavior. And therefore, when you change its behavior, it's not really a wild bear anymore, and you assume the responsibility of the consequences of its actions thereafter. So the government is pretty intent on forcing Dr. Rogers to stop feeding the bears. Why are they so insistent, Dr. Rogers?
Well, I think that they revealed their reasons in this temporary restraining order that we got against the Department of Natural Resources. It became a negotiation, and they've always been saying that they're worried about public safety. The truth is, in the 50 years that they've been feeding bears in this area, hand-feeding bears, there's never been an attack.
In 50 years, has never been an attack by a black bear on a person?
Right.
Wow.
Yes. And this community is where, by most accounts, that there should be attacks all the time, according to what most people believe about bears. But this is the area that does not have a tax and has 80% lower bear complaints than the statewide average. So it's really not a public safety thing, but their negotiation, the thing they were adamant about is that we did not have the den cams that educate hundreds of thousands of people around the world in over 500 classrooms. And they gave their reasons for that. I couldn't believe that they did, but there were two big reasons. One is that when people get to know these bears online, and anybody can see what we're talking about if they go to bear.org, our website, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a daily research update. And 2 days ago, if they go to that one, it gives these reasons.
And what are the reasons?
The one is that when one of these bears was killed, a handful, maybe 25 out of many thousands of followers, research followers, spoke out against hunting. And the DNR wrote that they cannot permit an activity, give a research permit for an activity that brings out that kind of rancor against hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason is that they have programs to try to interest kids in hunting to keep up hunter numbers, because when the Pittman-Robertson federal tax dollars are distributed to states, it's according to how many hunters are in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And when kids, there's over 500 schools that follow this stuff daily, when these kids see that mothers are take care of their cubs like they do and all, they might get to like bears and not become bear hunters.
And there, follow the money. Well, Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for joining us today and for giving us this really unique insight into the world of bears and to the question, the age-old question of feeding the bears. And it was a pleasure to hear the other side of the story for a change. And thank you very much for joining us. And thank you all there for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't. See you next week.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.